It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. We are joined on this very hot, hot spring day. I don't know what's going on with the weather, but I just want to say I'm in charge of the water cooler, not this weather. In the water cooler, it's always cool. So we are joined by the coolest guy in Carrboro, Damon Siles. How are you?
Hi, Gene.
You seem cool. You came in, you made it in from outside, which is a point in your favor.
Happy to be inside today.
I bet. You know, would you want an outside job today? I mean, I just couldn't, I barely made it in. And my car is the closest car to this building.
There's a lot of work going on outside, too.
Well, you know, if you're in the paving business, this is what you want, I guess, because I think that the story is that when you do asphalt paving, you get the best result if it's pretty hot.
Yeah, well, and it's all kinds of construction business, really. That I was talking to one of the contractors for the Martin Luther King Jr. Park, which is being constructed in Carrboro right now, and he was praying for dry weather. He said, give me two weeks of dry weather,
yeah,
and we can make so much progress.
Anything but rain, right. Well, that makes a lot of sense because of what they have to do when it rains, which is mainly they have to stay home.
Right.
you know, working out there with power tools and stuff, electricity and rain, just not a good combination, generally speaking.
Right.
So you've been traveling. I don't know why anyone would ever want to leave Carrboro, but I guess temporarily it's okay. Is that what I'm getting?
I come up with reasons occasionally, but I don't do it often.
You don't do it often. Well, just like we would call it a vacation.
It was a vacation.
You know, people come to Carrboro for vacation, you know.
But they
might be from wherever you went. So tell us where you went.
I was on the Outer Banks for a little while, just doing a spring vacation kind of thing. Joined some friends out there. Had a nice time. The weather was great.
Mm-hmm.
Water was warm.
Mm-hmm. No sharks.
Just relaxed. No sharks that I saw.
No sharks that you saw, which is an important thing. You know, it's bad if you can't see them. If they're stealthy sharks.
I think it's bad if you can see them personally.
It's probably bad. It's just, yeah, well, then you just have all the screaming, you know, to deal with. But I don't know. I think shark risk is sometimes a little bit overstated. But, yeah, you know. Jellyfish were always the thing that kind of got me worried about going in the ocean. I love to be at the ocean, but I'm not that much for going in the ocean, except maybe like up to my knees.
We were out there a little bit early in the season, so we weren't having any of those problems, fortunately.
And you didn't look like lunch to anybody, so that's good. That's good.
I don't want you to be
anybody's lunch. Right, right. And so, but then you went somewhere outside of North Carolina, is that correct?
Oh, you mean a couple months ago? That's right. I did. I went to Columbia.
Oh yes, yes.
For spring break, and visited some friends down there. Spent several days in Bogota, the capital city.
Yes.
And a couple of days in Cartagena, which is on the Caribbean coast.
That's quite nice.
And had a lot of fun.
Well, you know, that sounds relaxing. Do you get free coffee in Columbia?
It's not free, but it's inexpensive.
Is it really?
It's ubiquitous and inexpensive.
It's conspicuously not expensive. It's like getting sweet tea in North Carolina.
Coffee was one of the better experiences we had there.
Yeah, see, so that must be like getting tea in the South, getting sweet tea just anywhere you go. If you bought a biscuit here, have some tea. We made it. It's, you know, it's here. It's cheap.
And it was good coffee.
And it's
pretty much
good
everywhere you went. Yeah.
Really? Oh, gosh. Now, see, now I want to go just for the coffee.
People do that in Colombia.
Go for the coffee, stay for the drugs. No. I didn't say that. Nobody heard that. All right. So tell me what's happening in Carrboro. What's new lately? I mean, I know it's budget season and everything's new in a way, but I know you guys have a lot on your plate to get through.
Well, budget season usually does dominate the spring for us, and we're wrapping that up now. We received the manager's recommended budget a few weeks ago, and we've since that time made a few adjustments or asked him to make a few adjustments, and he'll bring that back to us tonight, which I know people are listening to our show a little bit afterwards.
So they'll get the after report, but we're recording on Tuesday. So
I think one of the big highlights for me in the recommended budget from the manager, and one of the things we had some extended discussion with him about, was adding some additional staff, primarily to the planning department, to add capacity there. We have a lot of work going on in the planning department and really throughout the town, and just want to make sure that our staff has the resources they need to deliver on the projects that we're expecting from them.
Yeah, so, and I'm sure the developers appreciate that too, because
I think it
can be a really long, expensive process for them. anyway.
I think that's a piece of it, but also we just have a number. I think primarily that what was motivating us was we have a lot of construction projects. So, for example, sidewalks and roadways and other kinds of transportation-related construction projects that can only move so fast based on how they're funded and so on. But it can help in some cases to have more staff who have the time to give their attention to those projects and move them through. So that's been a big priority for me. I'm glad to see that the manager's budget will include some additional staff capacity in the next fiscal year.
And of course, whenever you add positions, that's not just for 1 year. These aren't contract positions.
These will
be
permanent staff positions. And I think what's important for folks to understand is that they cost money. And I think the manager has found a way to do that this year through the annual operating budget, through the general fund. Running a small town, even a small town as cool as Carrboro, is can be an expensive proposition, and we have to keep our eye on that.
Yeah, it seems like all of the local governments at every level really are facing some serious decisions, big decisions about raising taxes and about either putting off projects or just trying to figure out ways to fund things that
I think in the particular, and I think that's you've seen at the county level and in our neighbors in the town of Chapel Hill, they of course are going through their own budget review processes and looking at some property tax rate increases. In the Carrboro side, we're kind of a small player in that pond and a small fish in that pond, a small player on that field. Whatever the right metaphor is.
It's the heat.
We're the little sibling in this relationship.
Yes.
And I think a lot of times
people
read
the
news and they think that the same things going on in those towns are going on in Carrboro. What's going on in Carrboro, though, and I think this is really important, is that folks may remember that last year we decided that we were going to begin a three-year process of raising our property tax rate by half a penny per year for 3 years. So over a three-year period, there will be a total 1.5 cent increase in the property tax rate. All of that increase, that 1.5 cent increase on the property tax rate in Carrboro that we agreed to last year, is going to be going to our affordable housing fund. So we're coming up into the second of those 3 years. I presume that we will agree to continue with that into the third year next time. But the reason I mention that is that we are dedicating that 1.5 cent increase entirely to our affordable housing fund. Apart from that, those small increases in our property tax rate, the town of Carrboro has not raised property taxes in, as far as I can tell, at least 10 years.
Is that right?
And so there's a lot of – I think there's understandably a lot of conversation in the community every year about our high property tax rate. And we certainly do have a higher property tax rate in this area than in many parts of the state. But in the town of Carrboro, we have held the line on the property tax rate for a good 10 years. Now, we often pat ourselves on the back for that. And I think sometimes that can be appropriate because we want to be thoughtful about how we're spending our tax revenue. But what doesn't get often discussed is that part of being responsible in managing the finances of a local government is also raising revenue when you need to raise revenue. There's a lot going on in Carrboro or that needs to be going on in Carrboro. Deferred maintenance on town facilities, important projects for transportation infrastructure, other kinds of public facilities that we are going to start very soon having trouble paying for if we don't think carefully about how to raise revenue.
It gradually usually provides the least negative impact.
So I think it's, we can look back on these 10 previous years and say, that's great, Carrboro hasn't raised its taxes in that period. But we also need to be aware of what opportunities we've given up because of that. What maintenance we've deferred, what projects we've set aside, and what does that mean for the next 10 years and more?
That's right. And I'm thinking, my background with this particular kind of thing is in the area of housing stock and public housing and how public housing is funded by the federal government, and that the federal government over the last 15 years has just cut and cut and cut and cut. And housing authorities that manage public housing have done more and more and more with less and less and less. And, you know, there just does reach a breaking point. They've come up with innovative programs like RAD, which is a way to allow housing authorities to fund renovations and improvements, capital improvements, using private dollars by allowing them to get mortgage money, basically, on the housing stock, which they, you know, that's not how they were built, but now it's about how they're renovated or improved. And so that money can come from the private sector, and then the housing authority can pay, you know, pay back a mortgage like anybody else who builds a house, and you pay back a mortgage. And that's great and everything, but not everybody can qualify for it. Some of the housing stock has been neglected for so long that now the repairs are going to be major renovations where you have to just take off the whole roof and replace all of it, which means everybody living on the top floor has to move out while they're doing this and the roof is removed. And if they had done it 10 years ago, they wouldn't have had to do that. So,
I think there's a couple of things about the dynamic you're describing that apply across the board, really, in areas outside of housing. This transfer of federal and state responsibility for funding onto local governments has increased the burden on us and our local communities to pay for things like transportation, transit, housing, everything else. But also this notion you're getting at here, too, about what does it mean as a local community to put off projects that you should have been doing all along.
You know,
Town Hall in Carrboro is a really good example of this. It's a historic building, and it's not in great shape, and it hasn't been in great shape for some time. And I think, in a lot of ways, Town Hall is emblematic of this pattern that I think Carrboro has gotten into over many years now of not keeping up, doing a lot of cool other things, attracting a lot of cool things from outside and doing a lot of other great amenities for the community. Carrboro is a great place to be, a great place to live for a lot of people.
And many of these things can help build the tax base,
which might,
you know, in 3 and 5 years make it a little bit easier to do the big project.
So.
You hope,
But we haven't seen that. And I guess that's what I want to point out is that we still have Town Hall and the Century Center sitting there, these prime pieces of town facilities, town properties.
That the public owns.
That's right, that are deteriorating.
That's right.
We need to take care of them, not only because they're important town facilities, they are public facilities,
right,
and they perform important functions for the community, but also because they are the locations of our town employees.
Right.
They are the workspaces for our employees.
Mm-hmm.
And we ought to be thinking about the people who we ask to sit in those office spaces or in buildings that are deteriorating around them.
People who at some times, and I know this from another job that I had, sometimes they're sitting there freezing in the summer on a day like this outside and overheated in the winter when it's cold outside because the systems in the building are not able to regulate the temperature in the building efficiently. So those lack of energy efficiencies, those make those buildings more and more expensive to operate. So
our big picture in Carrboro, to kind of put a cap on all that, is that we are a town of about 20, 21,000 people. We have a budget of 50-something million dollars. 30-something million of that is capital projects not in the annual operating budget.
Wow.
So we have a lot of stuff that we want and need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Building and constructing and and fixing
and now it's all about choices.
We've been letting that build up over years and years, and perhaps need to be thinking about long term financial sustainability of that kind of situation.
Right, right. Well, that's a good place for us to take a break and sustain ourselves. And we will be continuing with Damon, listening to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more. Okay, we're back with Damon Sales, and we're going to dive into the big picture. And I've just told him I have no idea what that means, but here's what it means to me.
Luckily, I don't either.
You've traveled extensively, at least compared to how much I've traveled, which is not extensively. I mean, I've been out of the country a few times, but not recently. And I have not been outside of the United States since Trump was elected. And I would like to know, just because he's just been, you know, overseas this past Memorial weekend and said and did things that, you know, just were like, why do you have to say that when you're in Japan? If you want to make your personal attacks on, you know, other people running for office and all that stuff. Can't you just do that only when you're home? Would that be too much to ask? I'd like to know your thoughts on how, if at all, Trump's presidency is visible to you when you're overseas and you tell people that you're an American, or do you? I know lots of people that say, oh, I'm from Canada. I just look like an American.
I guess my honest answer would have to be that I can't say that I've noticed it as being an issue, but that might also be that, you know, I tend to be hanging out with my friends and so on when I'm, you know.
And they know who you are. That's why you're there.
Right. So, and I think it's not as if I'm having to announce myself as an American. Here I am.
Right.
You know,
and you don't walk around wearing a T-shirt with American flags on it saying, right. You know, look at me.
Now, my experience has been, I think, when I'm in other countries recently that, I mean, people can kind of pick you out. Like, they know that you're American. You don't have to tell them.
Okay. So, I have to know. How
and
do
it's
they
not
know?
Because I'm wearing a fanny pack. And
what's the giveaway?
I think part of it is the language. Part of it is just okay. I don't know. That's a good question. You know, the things I'm kind of thinking about when I'm, you know, for example, this recent trip to Colombia was things that are sort of in my mind anyway about the stuff I'm dealing with on the local level, right?
Right.
So, you know, as you know, I'm a transportation or transit kind of nerd.
Right.
And I care a lot about
Thank
that
goodness.
Issue in particular.
Yes.
So when I was in Bogota, I spent a lot of time just kind of checking out, like, here's what the transit system looks like.
Yeah. And how do people get
around?
It's
actually pretty renowned around the world for being one of the prime examples of the bus rapid transit system and major public investment in things like transit and in parks and plazas and other public spaces.
Great places for drinking all that coffee, by the way.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to go to walk around in a community like Bogota and just kind of soak that in.
Yeah.
But also have to be aware of the historical and cultural and political context in which, you know, for example, development of their transit system in Bogota happened and why it is the way it is as compared to our context here.
Yeah.
They're not directly translatable.
Right.
But it's fun to do anyway. But in terms of having to sort of identify that being something about being an American in the Trump era.
Right, right.
First of all, I don't think I've ever uttered those words, and I hope never have to utter them again.
Yeah,
but
really.
Yeah, it's not something that really I spend a lot of time thinking about.
It'll be a thing that you look back on in 20 years and say, okay, well, that happened. You know, I got through that. You know, so whenever you're saying
like,
this
I think
in 20
when
years.
When you meet visitors here from other countries,
right.
I mean, I don't think, at least for me, what first thing that comes to my mind is, how do you feel about your leader? You know, it's like, it's just not how I think
about
people.
That's a good point. I mean, unless their leader is a really, you know, four-star fool.
Right. So the only other time I really found myself thinking about communities I was visiting vis-a-vis myself as an American and a visiting American was being in Cartagena primarily, but also somewhat in Bogota and seeing the very obvious effects of the Venezuelan refugee crisis. Venezuela is just across the border from Colombia.
Right.
They share a very large border. And there were refugees coming through in high numbers at that time. This was just a couple months ago. And, you know, there was that sort of just sense of desperation that you see with any refugee crisis,
right,
just like we're
right.
seeing on our border, southern border now, and knowing that that we have a political culture in Washington right now that is not helping things.
Yeah.
It's
so
and if anything,
utterly
the Venezuelan
broken.
Case
yeah.
is really probably exacerbating the problem more than anything else. So that certainly came to mind. But.
I mean, how are they received, the refugees, in terms of the – is there a strong anti-immigrant, anti-refugee attitude among the population, do you think?
I don't know. And not that I'm aware of. It's not something I was tuned into, really. It's just something I noticed. I mean, the folks I was noticing were folks who were really out on the streets trying to, for example, ask for money or ask for
right.
assistance from
just,
folks.
Yeah, just trying to
– Trying to get by. There was I remember one man in Bogota who was just trying to essentially give away all of his Venezuelan cash because it's completely worthless now. And what he really wanted was could you throw in some change his way? But he didn't want to take something for nothing. So he was saying, here's this wad of Venezuelan cash.
Maybe your children can play Monopoly with it.
And actually, we did find an artist who had taken Venezuelan notes and currency and created artwork with it because it's completely worthless.
Right.
So we saw that as well.
That's heartbreaking, thinking of, somebody's probably saved up that money and then just had to flee his own country and has probably all of the money that he had with him. And then wherever you land, it's worthless. As a spoiled American, admittedly, I can't imagine that experience. It's completely foreign to me. I can't imagine how I would know what to do.
You mean on a personal level,
just on a personal level as an individual, I just wouldn't know what to do with it. I'd have to.
It is a good reminder, though, I think, Gene, that we don't have to go far to relate with people who are having that similar experience to figure out ways to offer ourselves to help them. We have our own refugee migrant crisis in this country. Another thing that the Trump administration is not helping with in any positive
and
way.
And a lot of it, has largely created. Yeah. The really, really awful stuff has created that.
And we also have in our own communities deep, deep historic systemic poverty. So, it's not, we have all of these things happening for us here in our own communities and can do what we can to change it.
Yeah. Well, and so we shall. These are. I totally agree with you. You don't. You have to travel far or wide, or speak foreign languages to be able to see and understand this on a human level. It's extremely frustrating to me to see a lack of news coverage of these problems with children. On the border, these families that are still separated, they refuse that you have just complete, stubborn, illegal refusal of the federal government to account for what happened with these families. And to this day, to this minute, I believe that they are still collecting up and separating families and that we're going to find that this crisis, even, a year from now, we're going to look back and find out that it was much worse now than
it's
what we know.
Outrageous. And
it's
at the end of the day, what's
terrifying.
Happening is that the wrong people are in cages. It's completely disgusting.
Correct. And by the way, impeaching one guy is not going to fix that.
Exactly.
It's a much larger issue than that. It's there are many, many Republicans in various parts of our federal government that without whom none of this would be happening. If it was only one individual who was a little cuckoo, it would be have gone nowhere by now.
Well, and this is another issue that we can see the impacts of at the local level. We saw last year at least a couple of outright immigration raids by ICE,
right.
Including raids in our own community, taking some of our neighbors out of state and then out of the country without any sort of judicial warrants. We know for a fact that at least one of those raids was a direct effort of retaliating against our local governments in Orange County because we've been very vocal against not only ICE but against the administration's immigration policy such as it is. It's dirty out there.
It
is affecting us on a local level. It's affecting our neighbors.
And this affects our resources. But I'm as a taxpayer, I'm happy to see my resources going toward fighting this wrong, illegal, immoral policy at the federal level. But it's dicey. It's dicey out there right now. Well, we're going to take a quick break and maybe we can try to lighten up a little bit, I guess. It wouldn't be that hard, I suppose. I'm listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Damon Siles, and we're talking about Carrboro's new library that's going to be very, very exciting, should it ever be, brought online someday. Why can't Carrboro, a town that we know and love in part, not only because, but in part because it is so pedestrian friendly. It's a foot happy town. I think that Carrboro should outlaw cars. They should be illegal to have a car in Carrboro. You should change the name of the town to Footboro. Foot and bike borough. Okay?
Are you going to
you're running
petition
the
us for this?
You're running the government. Why can't you do this?
Gene, if I were running the government, things might look a little different.
They might. Or, you know,
I'm one of many. It's Carrboro.
Hovering airborne vehicles or something. I'm assuming, based on my intel, that the issue with the library that's delaying things is parking. Is that correct? Is that fair to say?
That's a big part of it.
Yeah, it's a big part.
Carrboro has people in Carrboro and in Orange County in general. I've been working for three decades really, to locate a branch of the Orange County Library System in Carrboro. We finally, over the course of a couple of years, have been working closely with our friends in Orange County to identify a location. That location is on South Greensboro Street. Folks will be familiar with the public parking lot that's currently in that location next mm-hmm. to Open Eye Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the building will be built. It's a building that will house the library along with some town offices and possibly other things. I think one of the delays came about, there were three parties to that kind of project moving forward.
Right.
There was the town of Carrboro, Orange County,
right.
and the Arts Center, which right. we were really happy to have on board in terms of the early planning of the project. Since that time, the Arts Center has actually had to withdraw from the project for their own reasons and just felt like it wasn't a good idea for them to stay in. So we're continuing to work with the county on tweaking the design of the building, thinking mm-hmm. about what that would mean for the footprint, for the massing, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
In parallel track to that, we have also been dealing with the question of what, if any, parking requirements this new building will place on the town. The library itself, of course, will generate some parking demand, and the county has expressed, because it's a county library, they've expressed
right.
that they will need X number of spaces to serve the library itself.
Right.
And then the rest of the building, of course, will have to drive some demand for parking. I think the big question now is, where will that parking go?
Right.
And how much do we really need?
Right.
And I think that part of the conversation has added some delay to us making further progress on the project. I find it personally very frustrating that it's come down to that we have yet once again come down to letting the issue of parking essentially dictate what we're doing with such an important project. And people kind of know my thoughts on that. I think we need to – this community, meaning the people of Carrboro
mm-hmm.
and the business owners and other folks who spend time in Carrboro, need to think hard and fast, I hope, about what they want downtown Carrboro to look and feel like.
Right, right.
And parking is an important part of that.
Yes.
If you look at an aerial photograph of the town downtown Carrboro today
– right.
A huge amount of the acreage is taken up by surface parking.
Yeah.
And the decisions over many decades that have led to that arrangement have consequences for mm-hmm. what it feels like to exist in downtown Carrboro. And if we're going to start toying with maybe adding a significant amount of additional parking to downtown or otherwise changing that arrangement, that's fine. But we need to be aware of what the consequences will be. We have adopted just 2 years ago at the Board of Aldermen a parking plan that says that we have a surplus of parking spaces.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember that. And you know, gosh, has it already been 2 years? That's very recently.
It is. That report and plan were unanimously adopted by the board. And that plan came along with some recommendations for how to implement the plan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Including some ideas about how to prioritize the various
right.
recommendations.
Better signage, too.
Right. And better wayfinding, better signage, so on. The big problem is that although we have a ton of parking spaces in downtown Carrboro, the vast majority of them, something like 85% or something,
right.
are privately held.
Mm-hmm.
So they're on private property. I think there's a lot of opportunity there to work with private property owners to open up that parking, so to speak.
Create an incentive plan
right.
somehow.
And I think in my view, we have not done enough to do that. We have not done enough to implement the plan that we adopted 2 years ago. And I don't mean to suggest that it's going to be easy to do. It certainly is not. It will take a lot of staff power to do it.
That's right.
And it will take some participation and cooperation by all of our local business owners and property managers.
That's right. But they have a lot to gain. So
they have a lot to gain. And I think I would rather see us go down that road of implementing our plan rather than making what I think is potentially a really big mistake in terms of adding a significant amount of additional public parking to downtown, which comes with a whole host of consequences. So,
So here's my big idea for you. Listening to all this, I think you need to go very bold and very Disney. Because you know what? At Disney World, you don't park at the front door of the Magic Kingdom and just walk in the gate. You park way over there, miles away, and then you ride these free transportation systems, the monorail and bus systems, to get where you want to go within the park complex. And I think that if you came up with a really, really cool, crazy cool way to get from the remote parking that could be any number of places outside of the downtown area, that if you had a fun monorail or a trolley system or something of that nature that was just plain fun to ride and free, that would be part of the expense of doing it. But you could, you know, locate cars outside of downtown. Yeah. That's my big idea.
One of the considerations that this challenge has raised for me is thinking about and hoping to get other people to think about what the trade-offs look like. So if we're talking about, for example, building a parking deck in downtown Carrboro, you know, structured parking, parking garages, parking decks are incredibly expensive to build. You know, even if we found help, which I'm sure we would from outside partners to fund that, to pay for it over time, et cetera, we would be spending a lot of money to do something like that, millions of dollars. Where else could that money be spent? To achieve some
That's
of the same ends that a parking
cost,
debt
right.
would bring
That's
us,
exactly
right? Would that money
be
better spent in better, more transit service?
Would a local business like to have a leasing arrangement for some of their parking that they're compensated for by the town? Yeah. I mean, during, you know, hours when they're not open.
Which is one of the recommendations of our parking plan.
Hey, what a great idea. How did I even come up with that?
So, I think there are a lot of strategies for us to be considering and more than considering actually implementing before we make what I think is a really big decision about a potential public parking in downtown that I don't personally see us needing right now or anytime in the near future. I want to add on to this as well one last consideration, and that is the conversation we often have, very much at the prompting of my colleague Sammy Slade on the Board of Aldermen, climate change. We're talking about parking primarily as it's, in terms of its economic development impacts, its land use impacts, and so on. But it also has climate change impacts, carbon emission impacts. And I think if we're going to be serious and claim to continue to be serious in Carrboro about that, about climate change and our own role in contributing to greenhouse gas emissions in Orange County, you know, the idea of building additional parking and continuing to press on this reliance on automobiles as the primary way of getting around in our community. And I don't just mean Carrboro. I mean Chapel Hill, all of Orange County and Durham for that matter. Then what are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, parking and cars and, you know, that big picture deal is I think, played a significant role in what killed the light rail project because of all of these considerations that Duke had and their employees and investments that they have in parking decks, because they do cost a fortune. And they've spent fortunes, a few fortunes, on building parking over in Durham. So, yeah, I mean, I think that that's all in the mix. And there does reach a point where you have to say, okay, so we're going to spend $5 million on this deck. Let's look at the $5 million worth of projects that we're not going to fund. And you pick out which ones those are going to be that we're not doing because we need this additional impervious surface. And by the way, be sure you don't take any of that money out of stormwater management, because we're going to need more money in there. So there's all that, right? So, you know, I don't want your job, Damon. I think you know that anyway, but I don't want your job. These sound like very difficult decisions. And
they are difficult. They're important challenges, though. And I, you know, as challenging as they are, I do usually enjoy doing it.
Yes. I mean, at least you can get this stuff on the table and hope that, you know, you get some percentage of the position that you like, you know, adopted. So I think you have a pretty good chance of that in Carrboro. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with just a few more minutes. Unfortunately, just a few more minutes with our good friend Damon Sells. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we are back with Damon Sells, and we're talking about planning and the future. Let's talk about the future and our dreamy future. I'm so old that I remember I covered the town of Carrboro for the paper when the Vision 2020 document was being created, mm-hmm. planned, and, you know, there was this gigantic charrette and all that stuff. And at that time, the Vision 2000 document had aged out, obviously, and a significant part of that was reviewing how much of that actually had come to pass, which is a very reassuring thing. And so I think that doing a 20-year look forward is terribly beneficial, because it just allows people to not get into the day-to-day muck of, well, we can't do that because there's a red light today at the corner of 4th and Main. And you can really step way back and just think of, if I were dreaming this, what would it look like? And so that was, I think, a brilliant thing that the town has now done twice. And now you're going to embark on a new type of process that incorporates many of the good things involved in that.
That's right. I mean, I've been, you know, advocating and talking about for many years now, even before I was on the board, about the importance of doing planning.
Right.
We have a planning department, and we ought to unleash them.
Release the hounds.
And I think the importance, and I'm happy to say that the board has agreed to embark on a comprehensive planning process for the town of Carrboro, beginning in the next fiscal year. In other words, beginning July 1.
Right.
Very happy that we're doing that. And the idea is to do, among other things, to do exactly what you just said, to look at all of our existing plans relating to land use, zoning, transportation, climate action, stormwater, you name it.
Right.
See where we've come. Look at Vision 2020 and see what pieces of that vision have we achieved? What haven't we achieved?
Yeah.
In what ways has that vision changed?
Right.
Get the community really engaged in talking about what does Carrboro need to look like in the next 20, 30, 40 years.
Right.
And then build a plan around that vision.
According to the people who live there now, by the way.
Who live there now, but who need to be thinking ahead as well as thinking about current needs.
Right, right.
And I think so what we've had for many years, as you know, as you mentioned, is the Vision 2020 document, which has been great. It's provided some guidance for the kinds of decisions that the board and the community make.
Right.
I think what we need is we need to make sure we update that vision and have a plan in place for achieving that vision.
Right.
It's great to have a vision, but it's even better to have a plan for getting there.
Right.
And that's what I hope will come out at the end of this process over the next 2 or 3 years. And that plan will encompass everything. It will sort of tell you how to get to that vision, but also relate back to all of your other priorities that you know exist. So we've talked today about financial sustainability of the town. Climate change, transportation infrastructure, stormwater infrastructure, all of these big plans and priorities that we already know we have get wrapped up into this larger comprehensive plan.
Right.
So that decisions the board makes in the future explicitly relate back to that plan.
Right.
So I'm really excited about that project. We're going to begin this coming summer with some community engagement, getting people excited about it, getting people involved, and go from there.
Well, I applaud you for doing this, and I think that the idea that really only big cities would do this is just the opposite should be true, that the more precious your resources, the more you should most carefully plan for how they're going to be spent, and especially as we were talking before about if you decide to do something big and you're going to spend X on this, you need to look at it in terms of that means that we can't do that.
Yeah. I think that this comprehensive planning effort in Carrboro gives us a really amazing opportunity to pull together the threads of all these different topics we've been talking about that we struggle with every day in Carrboro to update our vision as a community and making sure that we do a good job of engaging community members who aren't typically – we don't do a great job of engaging so that the community's vision reflects as many voices as we can get and takes account of the needs of everyone in the community.
Yeah.
So the plan is implemented according to the values that are expressed through the vision and addresses issues like equity and, as I mentioned earlier, the other priorities that we have.
Well, I mean, I just think as usual – I've thought this for a long time, but I think as usual you guys are really ahead of the curve on this, and I think it's going to pay terrific benefits to the culture of the town, how the government – how functional the government is. And that when – you know, that you can break down a lot of the silo problem that you have between and among departments with this kind of thing. And
well, I appreciate that, Gene, although I would say we haven't done it yet. So
But having the right ideas is more than just the first step. It's about the first 12 steps. It's really important. And because Carrboro has done the incremental things up to this point, I can't see how it can fail.
Yeah, I do think the community over many years has done a lot of great planning work, and I think for me the idea of a comprehensive plan is not to set aside or replace any of that work. It's to pull it all under one umbrella.
Exactly, yeah. It's not monolithic.
Here are
our
values. Here's what's important to us as a community. Here's what we know we need to remain vibrant and sustainable and equitable over the next few decades.
Right.
And here's how we get there.
Yeah, and we know we need it because we talked to 600 people and they told us that's what
hopefully
we need.
Hopefully more than 600.
You know, in the first session, I'm saying. the one that's held at your house. We'll give out your home address right after this. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, our time's up, and I thank you so much for doing this. I always learn valuable things when I talk to you, especially about coffee. Coffee is very important to me.
It's important to all of us, Jean.
Yes. Well, are you allowed to bring coffee back from Colombia when you go there?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to have to slip you a 20 the next time you go. Thank you, as always, for speaking with us and making us smarter. And, you know, good luck on your endeavors with all of these, library decisions and such.
Thanks, Gene.
I know it'll come out right. So everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.